From Studio 22, you're listening to ServeCast with your host, William Lamb. ServeCast is dedicated to challenging those who have a desire to serve, lead, and make the world a better place through the love of Jesus Christ. And now, here's William.
Welcome to ServeCast. My guest today is Pastor Tory Herron. And you guys know this other guy's name is Noah Herron, and they'll be with us in Studio 22 momentarily. But let me give you a little bit of information about Tory. Tory graduated from Lee University with a Bachelor of Science in Biology. He went on to chiropractic school, and then something happened in his life, and he felt a call to ministry. Now, we're going to ask him in a few minutes to unpack that and talk about that idea of how do you go from, you know, science and however you say that word, right? I understand how to say it. But anyway, how do you go from there to really ministry? I mean, I don't know. We'll get to that. And Noah's with us. He is the pastor of The Gathering at North Cleveland Church of God College Ministry and a great friend of ServeCast. Actually, a previous guest on ServeCast and probably a future guest. I like this guy. He's all right. Hey, by the way, he's off the market now. He is engaged, and we'll talk about that as well. So we'll be right back in Studio 22. Pastor Herron, Tory, I'm going to call you Tory. That's okay,
hey,
right?
Hey, that's awesome.
Welcome Tory's to Studio good. 22. We're glad you're here.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And welcome to Cleveland, Tennessee. The other day it was like 12 degrees, and now it's maybe 35, and this weekend is supposed to be something. I have no idea. It's just kind of crazy, but welcome back to your old stomping grounds, Lee University.
Thanks so much. It's so good to be here.
Glad you're here.
Love it. Love it.
And you're here with your son, and Noah, welcome, man. You're
What's
not a stranger
up?
To ServeCast. We're glad you're with us. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing awesome. It's an honor to be here. Thanks for having me.
You are now freshly, mentally engaged, correct?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. We got engaged November 30th, so 2 months ago exactly.
And who is she?
Her name's Maddie Perry, soon to be Maddie Herron. Come on.
Yeah, I know that, but if they're looking at your Instagram or following you on Twitter or whatever, they already know. And yeah, it's really great, man. Hey, by the way, my wife and I celebrated 30 years in 2018, and we're going to celebrate 31 in 2019. So it works.
That's
so
amazing.
We wish you well, man.
Thank you so much. Fantastic.
All right, Noah. So we talked about this podcast some time ago when you were here, and we talked about delving into a conversation with you and your dad. And now you're a third generation preacher, they call it. Is that right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Your grandfather, what's his name? Robert?
Robert Herron.
Good
yes,
deal.
Sir.
So a lot of folks know who he is. And so we're going to jump right into this. But Tory, I got a probing question for you from the front end. In your bio, you studied science at Lee University, and you went on to, you know, be a chiropractor, and all of a sudden now you're in ministry. Hey, bring us up to speed on what does that look like when you've got one track in your life, and all of a sudden you have to shift trails or shift tracks because a higher calling has said this is where you need to be.
Well, you know, first of all, thanks for having me. This is an honor to be here indeed, and especially to be here with Noah. You know, for me, I was headed down a track that that I thought I wanted and thought was God's plan for me, which was to become a chiropractor. It was something that I thought I wanted to do from the time I was a teenager, and was kind of pursuing that path. And it was while I was a student here at Lee University that I started feeling like there's something different, and kind of knew in the back of my mind what it was, ministry, but just kind of did what probably is common to a lot of young ministers called in the ministry. I kind of ran from it and tried to avoid it and just kept down the path that I thought I wanted to be a chiropractor. And about a year and a half into that program, felt like that calling that we talk about was so strong that I just couldn't ignore it anymore. And my wife and I, who Polly, who I met here at Lee, we were newlyweds, and she was on that journey with me. So we talked about it, prayed about it, fasted about it, and just felt like it was something we had to obey. And so we left chiropractic school and headed out into ministry and just haven't turned back.
He can still give adjustments. It's great. It's awesome.
Both physically and spiritually, right?
Exactly. Very thankful.
Oh, those are dangerous.
I wonder what it's really like. Are you Pentecostal? Obviously, you are. You pastor the bridge in Buford, Georgia, right?
Yeah.
So if you're Pentecostal and you're also got a little bit of history as a chiropractor, I wonder, you know, what is that like when you pray for somebody, both Pentecostal with a chiropractic kind of knowledge? I don't know. We won't try. Let's talk about this idea of calling. Let's unpack this. So you say you had a calling. Now, for some people who might be listening to us that aren't, you know, maybe they don't have all of the Christian, you know, vocabulary or the Christianese that we often talk about, you know, and so when they say calling, I mean, did like did like Almighty call you on the phone? I mean, what do you mean by a calling, and how does that, what does that look like in your generation? And then Noah, when your dad mentions that, I want to hear from you, from, you know, your generation on this idea about maybe when you were called into this concept of ministry, and what does that look like?
You know, it's interesting you say that, because I've answered that question so many times with other young guys that feel like maybe they're supposed to go into ministry. And they've asked, how do you know? How do you know? And I was always familiar with that term calling, because I'd heard my father talk about the time that he was called into ministry. And so for me, you know, there was no writing on the bathroom mirror. You know, there was no audible voice kind of thing, that someone, that I heard the voice of God calling me out, so to speak. But it was an internal voice that I just felt over the course of time, kind of a drawing to the ministry, to spend my life in it. And you know, when you're young and you had sometimes we have our own goals and ambitions, and I just kind of kept putting that little voice that I kept hearing, that calling inner voice, kind of on the back burner, pursuing what I thought I wanted. And eventually that calling voice inside just got louder and louder, to the point where I just knew that I was going to be miserable if I was doing anything else in this life except what I felt like God was calling me to do, which was spend my life telling people about Him.
Okay.
Yeah, and for me, it was kind of similar. I think there are a ton of really cool stories about people having like these memorable encounters with God where they feel like mm-hmm. they're called into ministry, and they have these visions of them doing ministry and stuff like that. I believe everybody's called to do ministry of some kind. For me, it was just like I had all these different things that I could have done and I think I would have loved to do, and some of them I still am doing, kind of ADD. But
hey, when you get ADD at my age, man, you can keep it. You know what I'm saying? So keep going, buddy.
So I'm kind of ADD, and but there was just like this. I would go to bed at night, and I would just think, what's going to give me the most purpose with my life? That was kind of the question I would ask myself, and I just couldn't think of a better answer than to go into ministry for me personally, as like a vocation. So that's kind of how. I decided to do that. I have a friend of mine. He's my age, might be a year older than me, and he's doing amazing things vocationally in ministry, and he talks about it all the time. He's never felt called. When people ask him that question, he's kind of like, what do you mean? Like, I just read the Bible, and it told me this is what I'm supposed to do. So I thought that was an interesting perspective. Not everyone is going to go into ministry vocationally, but I feel like the word calling sometimes gets too much juice around it. It's kind of like this enigma of, like, when am I going to be called? Well, you already were. So,
yeah. That's so good. Yeah.
Yeah. And I like how you say that, Noah, too, because a lot of people might wait for somebody else to validate their calling. Mm-hmm. And while that is necessary, and the older generation surely needs to bless the younger and continuing that process.
Yeah.
If nobody, you know, blesses you, does that mean you're not called? Maybe we'll address that in a minute. My dad was a pastor for, I guess he was a pastor for close to 55 years, I think.
Wow.
And then I've been in the ministry over 30 years. And one of the things my dad always told me about this idea of calling was, if you can do anything else, mm-hmm. then you're not called. Mm-hmm. If you can't, there's plenty of things I can do, but
sure.
if something else would satisfy me, you mentioned just now, you know, that purpose for your life, Noah, that was the most purposeful thing for you, you know. And my dad always said, if you can get away with doing something else, then maybe you aren't called, you know. So when you talk about purposeful, what do you mean by that?
I think that, like, growing up, the biggest generation change happened between my dad's generation, which you grew up being asked, how are you going to provide for your family?
Mm-hmm.
Where our generation, we've been grown up, what's going to give you purpose is what we care about. And so a lot of people get confused when they talk to millennials. They think they're not driven or whatever because they don't want to give you an answer right out of their mouth about what they want to do with the rest of their life, but it's because they're still trying to figure out what's going to give them the most purpose. It's a harder question for them to answer, and it's just, I think, a product of kind of the time that we're living in, as well as just a different way of thinking. And so, yeah, just purpose, like fulfillment, the thing that I can look back on my life and say, this is going to stay longer than I will, is what drives my purpose.
So, so Tori, tell me, is there a biblical example for a family continuing the heritage of ministry from one generation to the next?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there are quite a few. You know, as far as you know, just ministry passed down, you know, from one family to the next. You know, as Noah said, I believe to an extent, all of us that are followers of Jesus are called to minister. Jesus, you know, when he left this earth, he asked us to all to go, you know, into Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and make disciples. That was his commission to all of us. And we see that passed down often, you know, those generational, heritage, you know. Paul talked to Timothy and said, you know, the spirit that I saw in your grandmother Lois and in your mother Eunice, I see the same thing in you. You know, multiple examples of how God blesses generationally throughout the scripture. You know, he cast down the transgressions of the fathers to you know, to the children and the children's children, to the third and fourth generation. And he said, I also you know, those blessings work the same way. And so I think we see lots of examples throughout the scripture of things being passed down from generation to generation. We've definitely seen it in our family. And been blessed by it.
So how have you chosen to be intentional then to make sure that you keep, or you've created already, but that you maintain space in your family to what's the word? I suppose I'm saying, how have you chosen to make such a sacred intention or reminder of the sacredness of this calling to value that above everything else?
You know, I don't know if there's been anything that we've done that was intentional as far as trying to pass down the same desire to be involved in full-time vocational ministry. That, matter of fact, that hasn't been the case. That's what's happened, but that wasn't really intentional. That wasn't the intent. You know,
and I'm super thankful for that, because I probably wouldn't have done it, honestly.
Took the pressure off, right?
Yeah.
Maybe God could actually speak to you.
Yeah, so, for sure.
You know, what we have been intentional about in our family, and my father, you know, this was modeled from my father. You know, when I was here at Lee University and studying to be getting my biology degree with plans to go into chiropractic school, you know, my father was nothing but supportive of that whole plan, that whole idea, encouraged me in that. And then when the day came that I was going to tell him that, hey, I've had a change of plans, you know, now I've got this huge school debt from Lee University, and now I've got an even bigger school loan from half the time at Life University Chiropractic School. And Dad, I've changed my mind. I feel like God's called me into ministry, and I think I'm going to leave chiropractic school and go try to get a job being a youth pastor, you know, making $200 a week. And I was scared to death to have that conversation with Dad. And when I called Dad and told him, Dad started, he started crying on the phone.
Wow.
And he said, Tori, he said, I could not be more proud of this decision. If you tell me that you feel in your heart this is God leading you in this direction, then don't you worry about the school debt, the school loans, all of that. The Lord will help with that in some way. It's going to be taken care of. You just have to follow your heart and feel in your heart that you're following God, and I support you in that. And he supported me in that. He never tried to lure me into going into ministry, being a pastor, or anything like that. And so we, you know, we did the same thing with both of our kids, Noah and Carson, and just tried to encourage them in the things that they were good at, the things that they loved, the things they were strong in. But at the same time, you know, we tried to establish a biblical model of a home where, you know, the scripture, I believe, in Deuteronomy instructs us to talk about the things that we've learned, to talk about the things God's done for us in front of our children when we're sitting around at home, when we're walking around, when we're lying down, and when we rise, so that your children know of these things. They know of the goodness of God. They know of the miracles God's done in your life. They know where He stands in your life, and that He's the center of your life and your home. And so we've tried to do that and just establish a home where our children learn to love God, period, regardless of what they did for a living, that they were going to love and serve God in that role. So it wasn't an intentional, you know, kind of a thing that we wanted our kids to go into ministry. We just tried to teach them to love God more than anything.
There was always space, like, to think and have my own opinions and my own doubts and stuff like that. And so there was definitely times when I was later in high school and early college where I did that, but not having that pressure. I don't think whenever you encourage too much one way, our generation tends to go the opposite. And so a big part of it for me was growing up in a house where you were just as validated and just as encouraged if you had interest outside of the church as you did inside, because my parents truly believed that we are all called. And so if I was called to be a sports broadcaster like I wanted to, and reach people through that, that was going to be just as rewarding for my parents as it would have been if I had gone into full-time ministry. So with that space and freedom, I was able to just listen to God's voice and not have to worry about if I was going to be treated differently by family or friends, because they were all so supportive. So it was awesome.
The word that's coming to my mind is the word champion. You know, so for example, there's a lot of things we can cheerlead. You know, let me just encourage you to go get that done, right? But then sounds like to me that your dad, you know, Tori, your dad championed your call and your acknowledging of your call. And then your dad, you know, Noah, your dad, Tori, championed your call. And, you know, I think the key is that one of the benefits for us and as being PKs, you know, and preacher kids is recognizing that the champion means that I'm not just going to cheer you on. I'm champion. I'm going to help you own this.
Yeah,
I'm going to make space for you to be able to do that. So, hey, we're going to take a short break. Don't leave us. We'll be right back to continue this conversation with Pastor Tori and Pastor Noah. Hey, we're back, and we're continuing this conversation with Tori and Noah, talking about heritage and ministry. And if you're just catching us, you are aware that Pastor Tori pastors a church in Buford, Georgia, and Noah is the college pastor at North Cleveland Church of God, and fixing to get married. We're not going to let that pass, right? Matty Perry's probably going to listen to this.
Remind me as much as you can, man.
Excited,
miracles
man.
Happen.
This is true. They do. So let's talk about, in the first segment, we were talking about this idea of not forcing or pushing the mentality of calling on somebody, but also championing that when it is acknowledged by the person who is called. While I think, Tori, you said you were not necessarily intentional, but I do think after listening to you talk there, man, you guys were actually had created some space that became very intentional in developing kind of an atmosphere where you didn't feel pressured, Noah, but you could actually respond to that call of God, on your life. So having observed that and listening to you guys talk, what do you think is one of the biggest struggles that ministry families face, today? And maybe when you were younger, you're almost 50, right?
Yeah.
There you go. That's okay, Tori.
Not quite, but yeah.
No, man, you got to celebrate
close.
Because here's the deal. I'm almost 55, so when you get to 50 plus, you're on the downhill slope, right? And so and I'm going to make it to 100, and maybe your dad will make it to 120. We'll be all right. So I just redeemed myself for
Sounds
that.
Good.
But talk to us about this idea of what are some of the struggles that ministry-minded families are facing?
Can I start? Because I just thought of something immediately.
Absolutely.
The hardest thing for me growing up, and the thing that kind of like turned me off to church when I was in high school a little bit, was, and I see like a lot of PK struggle with this, is you see a whole different side of church than the normal high school student does. And so for me, it was really hard to separate the person of Jesus from the actions of some of his followers. And I didn't have a full revelation of like what grace was, and that, hey, like, yeah, God is still giving me grace today. Like, I'm still changing today. Just because they're saved doesn't mean that they're not perfect. But I would take things that I saw in the church or through people at church who are on their own journey, and I would be like, okay, like, they're this way at this point in time, but they're this way now. And I really struggled with that, and it kind of just put like a weird taste in my mouth. Whereas like some of my friends would just show up and they're not hearing about the behind the scenes stuff that I'm hearing at the dinner table, that we're having to go through as a church family and as a staff and stuff like that. They just show up and worship, and everybody there is on good terms for the most part. Where the PKs, they hear about the great, the good, and the not so good, and have to, from an early age, decipher like, okay, like Jesus is this way, but his followers are taking steps to being like Jesus, but they're not, they haven't arrived. That was really hard for me to wrap my mind around, and really it wasn't until I got to the end of my college years that I started to like truly see that for myself and how it had affected my relationship with God growing up a little bit. So that would be the biggest one for
Interesting
me.
That you would say that, because I just read a part of a book. I haven't finished it yet, but I've read part of a book in the process of it by Justin Franklin on Love Like You've Never Been Hurt.
Oh, yeah.
And he actually talks in that book about the very reality and kind of opens up some of the, you know, we live in a glass house in ministry. Mm-hmm. There's no other way around that. Mm-hmm. And he kind of opened up this idea that, you know, even before Sunday morning, there may have been a conflict in the home.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. but you don't necessarily try to be somebody different. You
sure.
are who you are.
Yeah.
So any thoughts on that whole idea of what families are facing today and what we need to be aware of?
Yeah. Yeah. I think for my generation growing up in a pastor's home and in full-time church ministry, some of those things that all of those things that Noah mentioned were very real. And I struggled with a lot of those same things. There seemed to be something different in that day when I was growing up than today. I'm seeing some changes. And I hear this from other colleagues, you know, peers, friends who their families are in ministry with them as well. But, you know, when I was growing up in the church as a PK, there seemed to be more of the mindset, at least it felt like it. There was this mindset that the ministry family, you know, the pastor and his family, who does live in that glass house, that that they are supposed to always have everything together. We don't show our weaknesses. We don't show, you know, if there's a flaw in the family somewhere, you know, that has to be kept hidden or secret, or, you know, it could somehow, there's this mindset that it might hurt the ministry or hurt the people if they think that we're less than whatever. And but today, and I don't think that was anything intentional then, but I think people maybe put that on us more so than we did ourselves. But today, I feel like people are looking for, you know, even in their spiritual leaders, even in their pastors, you know, they're looking for somebody that they can relate to, mm-hmm. that, hey, you know, they had a little squabble before church this morning,
That's
too.
True.
Okay, well, I don't feel so bad about mine.
Mm-hmm. Transparency.
You know, transparency, you know, I think is kind of the new authority. Mm-hmm. You know, I think people are looking for spiritual leaders, pastors that will just be real transparent with them. And whether they're looking for that or not, that's something that we work real hard at displaying at our church and from our pulpit and with our leaders and with our people, that it's just real life. You know, church is no different. You know, we have the same issues, problems inside the church as people outside the church. Mm-hmm. We just hope it's an environment where we can figure out how to deal with those, you know, according to God's plan and with his help. So anyway, you know, we try to be very open, transparent about our kids from the pulpit. They've heard so many stories about themselves from you know, in sermons that they're probably sick of it. Our marriage, you know, Polly and I are very open about, struggles that we've had in marriage. You know, we've had some tough, hard times in our marriage, mm-hmm. and some times where we didn't know if it was going to last. And we've been open and transparent with that, with our congregation. And that, maybe more than any other thing in close to 25 years of ministry now for us, has been the thing that people have said ministered to them the most, was that they could relate to the transparency, the openness about our own struggles in life. And growing up, there were times when maybe I didn't feel like it was okay to have an issue or to have a problem or for things not to be, you know, perfect. And that was probably just me feeling that way. My parents never did anything to make me feel that way. But those were some of the struggles that I dealt with as a PK, that I'm sure Noah did at times as well. So we work real hard at just being real, not trying to put on any kind of facade or front. And it seems to make life in the ministry a lot easier on us as the ministers, when there's just no pretense. It's just this is the way it is. This is us.
I saw a Noah, you know better than this. There's a hashtag out here going now that's trending, I think, called relationship goals or something like that, right?
Yeah.
I saw a post from Craig Rochelle earlier today. And he posted a picture of he and his wife Amy, and he put hashtag relationship goals, and he was talking about that, and he said the very thing you just mentioned, as he talked about the idea that, you know, man, even the families that are in ministry have the challenges that, you know, may or may not, you know, be seen by someone else, but yet the reality is, he said, what you see when we post something on Instagram is just the surface. You know, what you need to know is that Amy is she can be, very stubborn, and I can be incredibly demanding.
Yeah.
And sometimes I have to apologize, you know, and sometimes I have to say, I'm sorry, you know.
Yeah.
And I think the one of the best rules of advice for us is, as ministers, is to be willing to be transparent. Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Totally. Not everybody needs to know your stuff and everything about you, but at the same time, these people that come to listen to you preach, they're real, just like us, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So what are some ways we can be transparent, and what are some ways that you and your wife Polly have had to be intentional about making sure that you let God use your story to help weave hope in somebody else's story?
Well, we talk. Polly and I do some team teaching, speaking, you know, on Sundays, and and even when we're not doing that, when we are doing that, you know, we talk about the things that we're going to share, you know, in those messages. And of course, like you said, you know, it's never wise just to air your laundry to everybody and anybody. So you have to be cautious with that. I would never tell a story or use a personal example from home, from my marriage life or my family, if I thought that, number one, without their permission, or if I thought that it was going to put them in a bad light or in some way or hurt them in any way at all. And so we would talk about those things we're going to share and say, hey, is it okay if I share this? Is it okay if I tell this story? I really feel like it could help somebody today. And, you know, most of the time she's like, yeah, or I'm like, yeah, absolutely. If it'll help somebody, share it.
Always ask permission first.
Always.
Yeah, I've been married, like I said, 31 years this year, dude. Always ask permission and wait for the response. So I like what you said, Tori, because I think that's very important. And for those, you know, ministry leaders that are listening to this podcast, catch what this guy said. He said, if it can minister to somebody, if it can make an impact in somebody else's life, you know, and I think a lot of times if we're not careful, you know, speakers will use ideas or conversations or, you know, themes or illustrations because they think it might be catchy enough to connect with the crowd.
Yeah.
But I think there's more, it's a deeper principle.
Absolutely.
And the principle is, how has my life reflecting the image of Christ to a world in chaos? Mm-hmm. You know, so what have you learned from watching your parents, Noah, walk through this journey behind the the glass walls where the rest of us haven't seen. What have you learned that you want to replicate in your own ministry to make sure that your children grow up healthy as you have grown up?
Mm-hmm. I think the biggest thing is, you know, my dad and my mom are both incredible preachers. They're very gifted in that way, gifted communicators. But the biggest thing I've learned is that ministry is so much more about the way that you love people and the way that you serve people. And so you do that by being transparent. You do that by like being in the trenches with them. And no one wants you in the trenches with them if they don't think that you're being genuine with them and you're being real with them. From a future marriage perspective, it's been awesome because I was really afraid of commitment, I think, and I had this like preconceived idea that there was this one person and I hope I don't miss it. Like, I hope I don't mess it up. And if that doesn't work out, then whatever. But watching the transparency of their marriage really encouraged me, like, hey, these are my standards. This is what I'm looking for and praying for. If I find a girl who's like that, at the end of the day, it's a choice, and we're going to reach a place where she's going to want to kill me for not putting the toilet seat down, and I'm going to be upset with her about other things.
You better learn to put the toilet seat down, dude.
Practice now.
If we can just, it really encouraged me and helped me with my relationship with Maddie. We dated for 7 months, got engaged the eighth month, and it's because I was like, you know what, this girl, she's an answered prayer in all these different areas. Are we going to be perfect together? No, but I want to commit to doing life with you and being transparent and genuine with you because I've seen my parents do it, and I didn't need to wait any longer. So
it seems from your dad nodding his head that not only was she an answer to your prayer, she was an answer to your dad and Polly's prayer.
What an answer to prayer.
You got it. We'll be right back with our concluding segment on Faith, Leadership, and Service in Studio 22 with Tori Heron and Noah Heron. All right, guys, you might hear the laughter coming over the airways. It's because we're having a lot of fun here in Studio 22. And so we're wrapping down to our last segment. We're going to talk about this idea of how can these ministerial family kind of ideas make an impact in somebody else's life, particularly through the ideas of service. So listening to you talk about granddaddy, and we need to address your granddaddy in a few minutes, and we'll talk about him. But listening, you know, and watching the dynamics of the two of you, you obviously are more than, you know, a youth pastor at you know, the gathering or our pastor at the bridge in Buford, Georgia. You guys are friends. Mm-hmm. It's obvious. It's actually contagious, it looks like. So let me ask you a question. How has having each other to lean on helped to develop and nurture your independent calls to ministry? You know, the fact that you can actually have a conversation that's you know, about like values, basically, mm-hmm. because you both share some of those. But mm-hmm. how has it helped you to have a father you can lean on? And mm-hmm. I'm a father of three sons, three beautiful daughter-in-laws, and one grandbaby.
Wow.
And so how is having a son that you can lean on, you know, we're past the parenting stage, you know that, right? That's already mm-hmm. gone. Mm-hmm. We can't really parent them anymore. My son said to me the other day, Dad, parent me in some other area of my life than this, you know? And so he's 25, so I took his advice. Now it's friends, it's buddies, right? So how has this dynamic of leaning on each other strengthened you as individuals in your call to ministry?
You want to go?
I'll go first.
Okay, go for it.
So I feel like it is totally unfair to my friends who are in ministry who didn't have family in ministry, because I feel like I had such a advantage compared to them, not just with Dad. Obviously, Dad is probably who I talk to the most as far as advice and pick his brain and steal his sermons and all that stuff. Yeah. But but having a mom who does it too, and having a grandfather who does it, and a grandmother, I feel like my starting place was different than a lot of people who are just getting into it and getting their feet wet, not just in practical things, but my parents have been praying for me specifically every single day since I was a little boy. I remember walking out the door, the last thing my mom would say to me every day is, favor ain't fair and you're an eagle. And basically what she was saying to me was that birds flock together. She would always say this, birds flock together, but eagles soar alone. And even when I didn't really understand what that meant, they were praying and declaring life and favor over my life. And I really do believe that the success that we've had at the gathering is a testament to them, because if it wasn't for them, I would not be doing what I'm doing in the first place. Mm-hmm. But it's hard. Ministry is so hard. And so being able to just pick up the phone and call my dad and vent for 30 minutes and get his wisdom has been huge, and it's helped me make a lot of costly mistakes that I would have made otherwise. And so mm-hmm. it's been amazing. It really has.
And I'd have to say, it's been something similar in my life with my relationship with my dad, in that, dad has always been, I've always kind of referred to him as the rock of our family. And he's been someone that I've, even before going into ministry, I always knew that I could call dad and ask him anything. And I knew I would get the best advice from me that I'd get from anyone, because yeah. nobody loves me like my dad. One time, we're talking about a lot today about multi-generational ministry and families who are in ministry. And one time I was sitting in my dad's office. I was working for dad. It's kind of a unique situation. I was the youth pastor at the Plant City Church of God in Florida at the time. And our pastor had left to go into state work, in administrative work. And so my wife and I were on vacation, and I got a call from dad, and he said, "Hey, guess where I am?" We said, "Where?" He said, "We're in Plant City." "Oh, great. What are you doing?" "Well, it looks like we're going to be your pastors." And nice. We had no idea. The board had called him.
"Can I keep my job, Dad?"
Yeah. The board had called him. And long story short is he came to be our pastor. We had been on staff there for 3 years, and then dad wow. came there to be our pastor. So we joke about it, and we kind of did. We kind of hired our dad, my dad, as our pastor. And but one day I was sitting in dad's office, and so we were privileged to work together for close to 16 years in one church.
Wow.
And was sitting in his office one day, and we were kind of celebrating because something just really great, something significant had happened in my life, and a tremendous blessing that had happened. And dad was just celebrating with me. And I said, "You know what, dad?" I said, "I was thinking about this. I attribute a lot of this blessing, to you, because the Bible talks about the blessings being passed down from one generation to the next generation. And dad, you have been so faithful, and not only you, but your dad, my granddad that I didn't even know, my dad referred to him as the most godly man he's ever known." Mm-hmm. I never met him. He died when he was in his 50s before I was born. But I can say the same thing about my dad. I don't know a man that loves God more yeah. than my dad. And I said, "Dad, I honestly attribute this specific blessing that I'm the recipient of today to your faithfulness mm-hmm. and granddaddy's faithfulness that I didn't even know." Mm-hmm. And I believe that's just biblical. And so I've always had that to go to and to lean on. And I know not everybody does have that kind of heritage in their family. As Noah said, and those guys that are going into ministry who don't, it doesn't mean that God isn't going to send people and bring people and keep people in their lives that can be that for them.
Yeah.
But as far as Noah goes, I have drawn so much strength from him. So I'm getting it from one end, from dad and from a granddad that I'd never even met. But on this other end, Noah will have no idea how much strength, how much inspiration I have drawn from him. This guy is amazing, and he has done what Polly and I have always hoped and prayed he would do. He has started where we were and just launched to a whole nother level in ministry and in faith and in favor. He mentioned that his mom always said that, you know, prayed for favor. One of the things that we always did with both of our kids from until they were old enough to drive themselves to school, many times we drove them to school. And the last thing we would do before they get out of the car is we would pray for them. Before they get out of the car in the car rider line, we pray for the kids. And one of the things that we always prayed without fail, whether it was me or Polly, was, you know, God bless Noah today. God bless Carson today. Bless them to be leaders and not followers. Bless them with just unmerited favor, the favor of God, favor with friends, favor with teachers, with peers, with administration. Just give them your favor. Let them walk in your favor. And we have just seen the favor of God on our kids' lives. And it's not because there's something special about us that we prayed some kind of magical prayer, but it's because of the God who hears and answers those prayers when we as parents are diligent and praying for our kids. And so I've seen Noah walk in a measure of favor that I never have, that's for sure. And God using him already in greater ways than I feel he's ever used me. You know, I have said this before. I've told Noah this, and I've told other people today, you know, many times. Friends of mine will call and say, man, I just see what Noah's doing. You got to be proud. That's just so great. We're so happy for what God's doing with Noah and in him and through him. And I've told friends of mine and I've told Noah, you know what? He's already a better man and a better Christian, a better preacher, and a better leader than I am. And there's nothing less, there's nothing more less than I would ever want for him than that, to go on to a whole nother level in his walk with God and see God use him in even a greater way than I could ever imagine for myself or even for him. But this guy, he's something. He's the real deal. I see him walk in grace and show God's love and grace to people in a way that teaches me every day. And so just having him to, as you mentioned earlier, to be able to lean on and to learn from has been a tremendous, tremendous blessing in mine and his mother's lives.
That's awesome. So Noah, your granddaddy, what inspires you the most from your granddad?
I think faithfulness is like the big word. Like just, I think, what was it, 63 years he was in full-time ministry?
Yeah, I believe so.
63. That is a long time. I mean, it's the Bible constantly talks about endurance, and I didn't really understand what that looked like until my first year leading the gathering was up. I was just tired. I was so tired, and not just physically, but spiritually and mentally. And then looking at my grandfather and just the way that he seemed to effortlessly move through the last 5 years of his ministry, mm-hmm. as if he was, you know, going at the same pace he'd mm-hmm. always gone at. You know, you're a runner, you know what that's like to run at the same pace for a long time. And so it really, his life has encouraged me through that, through just our conversations. We get either lunch or breakfast every Monday together. He lives here in Cleveland.
That's awesome.
And so just hearing his stories and the way that he sees things has helped me pace myself in a better way. Helped me for everything from time management to, hey, I'm going to not hold on to that just happened. Because a lot of times my tendency and our tendency, if you love people, is to take on their problems as your own. And there's a difference between, I believe, helping people and serving people and carrying everyone's burdens at the same time. And so that's a lesson that I've learned from him, definitely, is faithfulness. That's the first word I think of.
Tori, what advice We're nearing the end of this segment in this particular episode today, and maybe for your granddaddy's sake, we'll get all three of you back at one point, right, Noah?
Yeah, that'd be great.
So that'd be doable. But Tori, one last question for you. What advice would you give your 20-year-old self? Knowing what you know in ministry, having, you know, been on the trail for this long, what advice would you go back and give yourself at 20?
Wow. You know, probably take a deep breath. Take a really deep breath. Pace yourself, as Noah mentioned. You know, he's learned from granddaddy. And don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to give your heart away. There's some controversy over that. There's some different views on that. You know, you could talk to some ministers and they'll say, you know, you got to set boundaries. You got to set parameters. You have to protect yourself. You know, or you'll get hurt, and that's true. And there has to be some boundaries in ministry as well as any line of work when it comes to personal lives. But at the same time, you know, I think I've learned and would say to myself, just to prepare myself at 20, that I don't know if it's possible to really love people fully and as deeply as we need to reach them for Jesus without being willing to risk our hearts, giving our hearts completely to it, to the ministry, and to the people. And, you know, that's what Jesus did.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't hold anything back. Mm-hmm. And so I would, looking back and starting over again at 20, I would just, never want to hold anything back and reserve anything. And then look back when I'm 70 and say, man, I wish I'd just given a little bit more. I wish I'd cared a little bit more for people. Mm-hmm. I wish I'd given them more of my heart. No, I want to know that I've done that every step of the way.
Awesome. Tori, thank you for joining us today in Studio 22. It has been a joy to have you, and I really appreciate you taking time to share with us. Noah, as always, thank you for coming
Thanks
in.
Thanks so
and,
much.
Congratulations to you, Maddie Perry.
Thank
we hope
you
this
so
is going
to
be great. Down, we know it's going to be great down the road. And
so
is your wedding like open invitation for anybody and everybody?
Oh,
I'm just kidding.
Man.
Just kidding.
Wish.
Yes, yes.
Maddie's
and,
parents might have.
Yes. Be a donation box at the door.
There you go. So really quick, the gathering. Yeah. How can people get to the gathering? Who's invited to the gathering? And how
for
often
sure.
does that occur?
For sure. So primarily we deal with college students and young adults up to about age 30. We do have people who are older than that who come every week, so it's open to anybody.
I even went once or twice.
Yeah, come on. So it takes place on Thursday nights at 8 o'clock in the North Cleveland Church of God Dixon Chapel. Service goes till about 9:15, and we do some other things throughout the week. But if you're new, I'd love to meet you, hang out with you, get you plugged in, get you involved with what we're doing, and we'd just love to see you there.
Good deal. That's so from awesome. Noah's mama, she would say, favor ain't fair, and you're an eagle.
You're an eagle.
And from yes, Studio 22, as always, remember, you're made for more. Somebody in the world of chaos needs you to invest in their life. And as you've heard from Pastor Heron, make sure that you take time to give them your heart, because, in fact, Messiah gave his heart to us. Have a great day. We'll catch you next time on Surfcast.
Fall at the mention of found the sweetest hope. For in your cross I boast all that I was before now remains no more. You gave me life, so fill my cup till it overflows. Quench the longing of my thirsty soul. Let your glory and your love run over. In you I'm made whole. Fill my cup till it overflows. Quench the longing of my thirsty soul. Let your glory and your love run over. In you I'm made whole.
You delight, you delight in showing mercy. You pour out your love upon me.
You delight in showing mercy. You pour out your love upon me.
Thank you guys so much for joining us on Servcast. Be sure to rate and review us on iTunes and share us on Facebook. Hey, if you've got any questions, send them to servcast22@gmail.com. Thank you guys for tuning in. We'll see you next time on Servcast.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Servcast. The thoughts and opinions expressed on Servcast are those of William Lamb, his guest, and no one else. Until next time, this is Servcast, signing off from Studio 22.